Now, I understand there are several factors behind terrorist attacks, but can you tell us what role mental health plays in those scenarios?
To be clear, there are very few studies that have actually gone into it. Of those that have gone into it, in a brief summary, really, is that there's about, 25% of attacks, the information's come from open source, but so it's not always reliable, but about 25% of attacks have some sort of mental illness or mental health problems involved, or the perpetrator has some sort of mental health problem. So it's not a large number from what we know, but it does play some role. But we can't always conflate the two.
So just going back to the Bourke Street attack, what role do you think mental health might have played in that attack?
Well, I think it was a significant role in this. I mean, you see a whole lot of things behind this. We now see there was sort of low-level criminality. He was involved in drugs. He didn't really, there's information out that he attended the Hume Islamic Youth Centre, but I know for a fact that he may have gone into the restaurant. He may have prayed there once, but really didn't have any solid role with the Hume Islamic Youth Centre. But in this case, according to his family, he had significant mental health issues. So combine that with possible drug psychosis or whatever, it played a fairly significant role. It's certainly not a lame excuse, and it certainly really played out in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. How can mental health services and the government provide better resources for individuals who may be struggling with mental illness and be at risk of radicalisation? Because I understand it's a very, I guess, tough and stringent area.
It looks highly complex, and I think those that experts that come out now and say that we've got to do have more youth workers or do this and do that, I think we're a little bit light on. It requires very complex solutions and a lot of close work with families, possibly with communities. But one of the major issues here is we're blaming Muslim communities on this. We've really got to blame it on a whole multitude of factors. We've got to blame it on people not feeling belonging, and we've got to look at the and that can lead to marginalisation, that can lead to mental health problems. It really requires a very complex and nuanced response to deal with this.
Yeah, there's definitely so many elements that come into it. And Prime Minister Morrison has put great pressure on religious leaders to stop these attacks. How would you respond to that?
Well, that's absurd. That's absolutely ludicrous. And what are they? Firstly, it's like the leaders have some sort of knowledge of all their constituents, and that they know what they're doing, and therefore they have some sort of role in trying to stop it. I just think that's if you go to any, it's like calling on all Catholics to deal with pedophilia. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And on the other side of it, I know that communities can't do more. They're doing all they can, and certainly with the communities, even the ones that's come, the Hume Islamic Youth Centre, that's come to the attention in a lot of media articles. I work very, very closely with them, and they're doing all they can. They do a lot of hard work on the ground. They work with a lot of kids, but not to do with violent extremism. They work with a lot of kids that have got drug issues. Muslim, non-Muslim, they work with kids that are involved in domestic violence. They deal with a lot of kids with mental health problems, such as self-harm and suicide. So we've got to be very, very careful on how we point the finger here. And I think they really, really need to point the finger back at themselves, the politicians, and say, what can they do more to support communities, to support the mental health system, and stop this damaging rhetoric that they've been doing following this terrorist attack?
You did mention marginalisation and self-harm. What other kind of effects do statements like Morrison's have on the Muslim communities in Australia?
Well, racism, Islamophobia leads kids, maybe questioning their identity, who they are. It can lead to what's called cultural homelessness. That's not my terms. That's some psychologist friends who have done a lot of work around that. But that's looking at someone that has difficulty, or they're trying to follow the sort of the strict either cultural or religious beliefs or norms of their parents or their community, yet they're also trying to knock on Australia's social door. They don't get in there, and they sort of feel that they're lost in between the two. Now, the most, that doesn't, you know, lead to much. It just means that they, you know, they have difficulty growing up and difficulty transiting from adolescence to adulthood. But for some, it might lead to what's called a sort of fight or flight situation where they do some sort of activity, possibly self-harm, possibly suicide, can be, you know, other sorts of delinquency. But for others, they might try and leave Australia just to escape to someone where, which offers them some sort of identity. And we've seen that with, you know, a few cases with the Islamic State. So, and then we think too much into this, and sometimes it's some young people want to take action. They feel strongly what's happening overseas, so they want to, what they see is positive action and go overseas and do something. But look, I'm not justifying this. I'm just trying to explain it as a criminologist, as a criminologist does. You know, we try and understand crime. So
yeah, there's definitely examples in that have been in the media and different things like that where you can see these things happening in the Muslim community. And you do work with the Victorian Muslim community quite a bit. Can you give us an idea of what the response has been in the community following the Bourke Street attack?
Well, most of us, I would say, I sound like, for most people that I work with, are extremely upset with what happened. No one wants to see anyone hurt. They, you know, again, they are, you know, they always sort of self-examine after this, and they always feel they have to come out and justify that they weren't involved and they don't endorse it and all that sort of stuff. So there's been a number of things happening following this sort of incident, but for them, you know, life goes on in the sense that they're, you know, back at work now, I imagine, and continuing on with their youth programs, their youth connection programs, leadership programs, sporting programs, all sorts of stuff that they do on a very much on a volunteer basis and very much on a shoestring. They don't get much funding, they don't get much support, but you know, life goes on. But we hope that we can somehow reach out to kids that are, you know, totally disconnected in a sense. And we, you know, try and do something about it. Already, the, you know, as I said, the communities do a lot of work. And what we try and do from someone from my perspective, from a research and academic perspective, is we try and provide some sort of enhanced capability to support what they're doing and fill the gaps what they might not be doing.
Yeah,
that requires a lot of trust building, a lot of strong relationships. Something that the government doesn't seem to have at the moment.
Absolutely, there's only so much I guess you can do at the community level. When it feels like we're having this type of conversation after every single terrorist attack that we've had in Australia. Obviously, Australia's current strategy of tightening immigration, heightening surveillance and security measures isn't able to completely eradicate this violence. I understand it's a bit of a loaded question and we haven't got too much time, but how do you see a way forward from here?
Well, what you've just said is I would argue that the tough legislation, tightening, you know, over-securitizing, immigration, all that sort of stuff leads to problems. And, I would hate to... I'd be careful how I say this, but you could almost say that some of these strategies are contributing to the problem. The way ahead is, yes, we need strong security. You can't fault the police, the Victoria Police, for example, what they did. They did an incredible job under difficult circumstances. No one's denying that. And we've seen, Sheikh Umran at the Hume Islamic Youth Centre say, you know, saying bloody police. You know, that was taken out of context. I know what he was trying to say and why he said what he said. But he has a point in the sense that not bloody police, but that community and communities like them have gone to the government. They've tried to get funding, but they've been knocked back. So when the government comes out and says the community leaders to do more, well, you know, it's a frustrating experience. It is like Groundhog Day. We're back here again. You know, another attack. All experts coming out and making their comments about very, very sensitive and delicate issues. We haven't made much progress and the government hasn't made much progress, and I would argue we're going backwards fast.
It's going to be interesting to see where conversations like ours take us in the next couple of months, and let alone years, to see whether you know, the communities, the Muslim communities, are felt to be more included in our own society, and whether that makes a big difference. And I guess top-down solutions aren't always working, but there is definitely needs to be a collaborative effort from both the community and the top as well.
Can I make this one comment on that? I really think that the community, the government's need to give more responsibility to communities to let them do their stuff. And, you know, there's a good thing about what we do in relation to co-design work and design programs with communities, with government. And, you know, you need the accountability. Police need to be involved if it's a difficult case and it's going backwards. You know, we need the accountability. But generally, you've got to give more responsibility to communities without blaming them and without, you know, creating more of a problem. So.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dr. Clark, for talking to us today and talking us through, I guess, the criminology side of things this morning.
Thank you very much for having me.